You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in to episode 304 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. Today, an awesome show breaking down that many awesomes worth of a victory. Kentucky goes down to Gainesville, defeats the Florida Gators 87-85. But before we get started, a quick message from our friends at Justice Dental. Sources Say is presented by the great team at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations by scheduling an appointment online at justicedental.com or by calling or texting 859-543-0700. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Justice, and their team look forward to seeing you soon. I'm your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very excited to be joined by none other than Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I'm fantastic, and you know, Jack, that I'm all about talking quad one wins, and Kentucky certainly got one on the road yesterday, overcome a lot of adversity at different points of that game, and honestly, I don't think that you could start league play off in a better way, in better fashion, because they had a lot to overcome, and it was a total team win.
Down 11 with 2 minutes to go in the first half, there were a lot of avenues for things to fail. This could have been a game for a young group to let go of the rope in a very hostile environment against a very, very good, talented, physical, strong, rebounding team that directly counters what Kentucky does very well, what they struggle with, where Kentucky struggles the most on the glass, they were the best rebounding team in college basketball. So this was a direct head-to-head battle of opposite forces. Something had to give somewhere. Either the physicality and the rebounding was going to outplay Florida, and it was going to outplay Kentucky, and we were going to see them suffer their first kind of head-to-head battle against an equal competition. UNC Wilmington was obviously a lesser competition. They played down to that, but the first time we saw a legitimate SEC foe, they could have folded in that realm, or we could have seen Florida kind of struggle to match up against Kentucky's athleticism, speed, pace of play, shooting, those sorts of things. So This was a really good test to see a measuring stick of where this team is. And we got to see a neck-and-neck battle down the stretch where both sides kind of threw what they're best at the other. And Kentucky was the one down the stretch to throw the daggers. John Calipari said to close out the game that this is how championship contenders are built. You have to go into those types of environments and win those games and learn how to win those games. The main theme to open the season: how do we close games? What's our recipe to win? We could get all the way up to that point, but what about that last segment about closing and executing down the stretch? This Kentucky team has learned how to do that, and now the proof is in the pudding. This is a championship level basketball team.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the way Kentucky does it too, Jack. At one point in the game, it's DJ Wagner going on a run. Then Antonio Reeves hits shots. It was Aaron Bradshaw late. Reed Shepard hitting free throws late. Rob Dillingham made a big bucket along two there. I think Kentucky's maybe down four or five there with about 7-8 minutes to go in the game. He gets a big shot. So it's the way Kentucky can come at you in waves at different positions with different people. And that's what I meant by it's a total team win. And to start league play on the road against the team in a sold-out crowd, a team that's looking to build its NCAA tournament resume. I think Florida's a good basketball team, and that's going to be a team I think is going to push for an NCAA tournament at large bid there, especially as we go throughout the season. Like they showed me enough yesterday, but Kentucky's resolve and the resiliency that we've seen in some key moments in the non-conference, it showed up again yesterday on the opening day of league play. And to me, there was one play, an out-of-bounds set, and we'll get into all the ins and outs of the game. But we talk about John Calipari not running offense, trying to score points on baseline underneath situations, and they ran an excellent play, a pin down for Aaron Bradshaw to get a jumper. Did you see the reaction from John Calipari, though? That told me how important that game was to him and to this team and to this program. I mean, it was a double fist pump that he's like, yeah, we executed there. We got something. And that kind of jump-started the closing stretch of the game right there. The first 4 minutes of the second half gave Kentucky a chance. They got it even, and then they made their move in the final 10. And then look, that's a massive quad one victory on the road for the Cats.
Well, we have dogs. What I talked about to these guys is if you want to be a championship-level team, you've got to go on the road and play against somebody's best, hang around, and then win the game. Everything is working against you because they're going to play as well as they can play. It is what it is. They showed it today. That was Cal's, all right, we got this. Like, there is a level of confidence and, you know, just there's something, that it factor that Cal clearly sees with this group, that he's willing to look at the night and day difference between how we've seen kind of how he operates with some players in the past versus what we saw with Aaron Bradshaw and his trust in him and Rob Dillingham, both of those two combined in a tale of two halves, or I guess three quarters, a tale of quarters, where it's three quarters of the game, Aaron was just not good. I mean, unplayable at times. And that last 9 minute stretch, Aaron Bradshaw goes for 10 points. Cal says afterward, he was awful. Aaron Bradshaw was awful in that first 31 minutes. In the last 9 minutes of the game, goes for 10 points, five rebounds in the go-ahead three. The trust in Aaron to make that shot after the struggling the way that he did, and, you know, Cal kind of making a point to say Aaron is going to get benched if he does not get his stuff together. If he continues to get beat down low and not enforce his will against other physical teams, you can't play. We can't play you. So it would have been so easy, Sean, considering how the game was unfolding, Trey Mitchell playing as well as he was playing, just kind of reverting back to what we saw earlier in the season with small ball, Justin at the four, go three guards and just kind of ride things out. It would have been so easy for Cal to just kind of go back to his comfort zone. But he said, no, I'm sticking with this plan. I trust Aaron Bradshaw to make that shot. Not only to make that shot, but to draw it up for him, that baseline out of bound to him for the, you know, pin down jumper that he drilled in confidence. And then to follow that up, he gets the block on the other end with a minute 30 to go, then goes right back and hits the wide open catch and shoot three. That sequence is this team's identity and the culture around this program right now to a T. We wouldn't have seen that level of resolve last season. We wouldn't have seen it even the year before that. There is something to this team, and I think the tale of two halves, if you will, with Aaron Bradshaw is kind of the greater part of this story that I really, really love. It would have been very easy to give up on Aaron Bradshaw, and Cal didn't. I really respect that.
Oh, I do too. And the plays that he made and stuff down the stretch, it now you can throw him into that collection of moments that we've talked about on the show where it's been Reed late in games. It's been DJ late in games. It's been Antonio Reeves making some shots down the stretch. Trey Mitchell. Now you can kind of group Aaron Bradshaw into that same mold of making plays in clutch moments when Kentucky needs somebody to step up and make it. Like, it's the collection of what Kentucky's done now. It's multiple guys doing things on different nights in different matchups, in tough road environments, in the neutral floor against North Carolina, Jack. Like, as these things continue to play out and happen, it not only gives this team and this coaching staff confidence that they can go on a run in March, it's also giving this fan base the same confidence that, you know, regardless of what's going wrong in the first half, and that's what I kept saying yesterday. I put it out, I tweeted at halftime, Kentucky's going to win this game. And I was confident that they were. I just kept saying, weather the storm. Florida's hit some shots. They banked in some threes. I told somebody, let Florida shoot 30 threes and Kentucky wins this game. And they got above that mark. And look at that second half three-point percentage for Florida. What was it, 9%, I believe, is what mm-hmm. they shot from the three-point line the second half. It eventually, averages become averages and numbers become numbers. And that's what happened down the stretch, and Kentucky executed. They got themselves in position. They made a run. How about late in the game, the camera catches Antonio Reeves and Trey Mitchell locked in together at half court before defensive possession? Like,
oh, sick.
That, and he, to me, we have solidified this months ago. Trey Mitchell is the most important piece on this roster. When it comes to his poise, he showed up from the opening tip yesterday ready to play basketball. And there were a lot of points in that game where his IQ showed too, where they were getting switches that they wanted. He was playing out of it. But just his toughness that he adds to it. Then Kentucky's dude started taking over in certain moments, but he was kind of the anchor that held it all together.
And would it change your opinion for the better if you knew that he was very questionable going into this game? I heard leading up to it that, you know, Camp Cal started after the holidays when they got back from Christmas break, and two-a-days, all-out scrimmaging, you know, wear and tear, and everybody's sore in January. This is when kind of the transition of early season kind of becomes into the meat and potatoes of, all right, it's put up or shut up time. And I was told that, you know, leading up to this game that Trey had been battling some stuff and was always going to play, but was definitely going to not be 100% going into this matchup. And it scared the bejesus out of me because we knew what this game was, what it meant from a physicality and rebounding. When that was the game, when that was this game's identity, and it was going to sway one way or the other, who was going to, you know, be able to control the glass and, you know, contain that level of physicality, and knowing that you're kind of anchoring force in that with Trey Mitchell was not 100% and just sore and beat up. I was like, man, it's going to be really tough to win in that environment with young guys, him being kind of the stable veteran presence. If he's not kind of able to give everything he's got, what does that mean? How will everybody else respond around him? And Trey goes out there 35 minutes, plays his absolute ass off, is that physical presence, is that rebounding presence, goes for 12-10. And you know, Cal, I thought Cal's quote afterward was great. Said, asked the reporters, did we out rebound them? And they said, no, you know, lost by three. And he goes, that's out rebounding them. Because it's true. You just had to stay stable in that area and compete and fight. You didn't have to crush them on the glass. You just couldn't let them crush you. And they were able to contain them and lost 43-40. I'll take that. And that's how Kentucky was able to win, by giving themselves a chance on the glass, because everything else kind of played out around it. They finally settled in, started making shots. They finally were able to get in their offense, and the guys that were missing shots they characteristically do make, or that were uncharacteristically missing them, they were finally settling in and making shots in the second half. Everything just kind of worked out as a result of the one key of the game plan working in Kentucky's favor. So that was a statement, but that doesn't happen without Trey Mitchell fighting through in the way that he did, knowing after the fact that he, you know, before the fact and after the fact, what he was battling going into that one. I thought that was a pretty good statement.
Yeah. And it's just a lot of stuff too, that maybe doesn't show up, like just being in the right spot, you know, taking a charge in transition, like he took there early in the game, grabbing three rebounds in the opening segment of the game, making the right pass, like setting a good screen. It's those things that Trey does, but it's his basketball IQ that stands out the most to me. And we've talked about the basketball IQ overall on this team. But second half, Kentucky runs good stuff. I mean, we're talking right at 90 points, and they only made 5 threes. Think about that. Like, this is a team that can score at a clip with the best in college basketball. And it wasn't their best three-point shooting night. They didn't take a ton of them, though. I think, what were they, 5 of 20? So they still got to that 20-point mark. But when you're looking at what they do offensively in the second half, there were some possessions where it was just get the switch, get the matchup you want, and attack it. And a lot of times it was Trey Mitchell getting a post up on a smaller guy. There was an offensive rebound that Kentucky got in the second half, and they ended up getting a matchup that they wanted with DJ Wagner. And you can go back and find this clip. It's definitely under 14, under 15, but DJ Wagner hit a three from the top of the key.
15 minutes left.
Rebound. 15 minutes left. And we've talked about this guy on the show too this year. Watch John Calipari and Tyler Ulis. They're in sync with each other. They both recognize the matchup, and they're both going, they're saying four flat. Flatten it out, let DJ go. That is basketball IQ. Recognizing that you've got something off a scramble and now you attack it. That's not anything that Kentucky's doing offensively just to get it. It's just recognizing the matchup, and then Kentucky takes advantage of it. DJ does it. So those things and having guys that can do it in those moments, that is a big step and a big reason why Kentucky's in the position it's in now than what it's been in the past. It can just, it doesn't matter. If you get the wrong switch defensively, Kentucky will punish you inside and outside.
What do you think of the trust in, we talked a little bit about Bradshaw and the kind of tale of two halves with him, but Dillingham, 2 points, 1 for 4 in the first half, 4 turnovers, follows that up with four points, 2 of 2 at the line, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 0 turnovers in 11 minutes, hit that clutch bucket. Cal saying after the game, I didn't give up on you because I trust you to fix it, to get through the making the difficult play just for the sake of doing so, to overcome that need to just want to go that extra mile and just settling in and making that extra play. What does that statement say to you?
Resolve. That's the word throughout this entire roster to me is resolve. Like, they're not phased. It's I need you for the next play. Whether that next play is the following possession or if it's 4 minutes from now, I need you for the next play. Now, Cal's probably going to go back and see this on tape. 2 of those turnovers were on Bradshaw. I'm telling you, there were a couple that were on AB there. He has to be able to hold off and seal that guy under the basket. That's got to be a dunk at the rim. And then getting out of that ball screen, he's got to get out of it quicker. So, but in the moment, the game's so fast. And I think that, you know, Cal probably thought, okay, Rob, you're getting a little bit out of control here. Let's settle you down. Credit to Rob, though, for coming back, like you said, second half and making big shots. And also Cal having the trust to go right back at him. And that's the thing. Like, as well as these guys play, they're going to have their stretches of play where they don't look good for 3 or 4 minutes. It's about what you do. My door just opened, and I thought somebody was coming in on me. It scared me. So if you see me look away, I think
it's
the wind
a ghost.
Just blew. Yeah,
it's a ghost.
But no, what Kentucky does in the balance of its attack, and whenever everybody's ready for the next moment, Jack, like you don't see guys when they make mistakes go to the bench and just drop their head because they know they're going to get another opportunity to come back and make up for it. And it's been DJ, it's been Reed, it's been Rob, it was Bradshaw yesterday. That resolve within the locker room, we've had some teams here at Kentucky that have had and showed resolve. I don't know if there's – I've seen a collection of dogs, as Cal calls it, and guys that just are not fazed by the moment, good or bad. You know, better than this one.
So, looking back in history – the 2009-10 team, the only two games it lost from the regular season were true road games at South Carolina, Tennessee. 2010-11 lost 6 SEC road games before its run to the Final Four. Barely beat Tennessee in Knoxville 65-62 and Vanderbilt in Nashville 69-63 in that title run 2011-12. Then the one that really stuck out to me, double overtime in its first SEC true road game at Texas A&M in 2014-15, 2 losses at Tennessee and Florida in 2016-17, and that 2018-19 year 77-75 loss at Alabama to open conference play. Games like this happen in SEC play. This was always going to be a challenge, whether it was this one or the next or 4 SEC road games from now, and we're going to get another one. This is how you learn how to win in March. They had to figure out, okay, we got punched in the mouth. What do we do now? It, like I said to start the show, there were 12 different chances for this, for Kentucky to really let go of the rope and say, all right, not this one. Let's turn our attention to Missouri, then hope to get them, you know, get back at them next Saturday in College Station. Maybe that'll be our first opportunity to win a true hostile environment. And everything was working for Florida in its favor. And it was built up to be an all-time road atmosphere. I mean, the orange out, the debuting the brand new orange uniforms, the students coming back from winter break early specifically to make it a hostile environment. And then, like, Kentucky fans show up and turn it into go big blue chants in the second half. Like, little things like that help. But this was all respect to Louisville. Sorry, their environment stinks, and we kind of had to embarrass them at their on their home turf. But this was the first real championship environment that we're going to see in March. This was, you know, that and, you know, the North Carolina game, we saw Trey Mitchell say, you know, it felt like a March Madness game, and it kind of finished like a March Madness game. This is where you learn if this team is capable of having the dudes to, you know, kind of get put you over the hump and win those types of games. And looking back in the history of the John Calipari era, every good team that Cal has had, every real contender that Cal has had, they've either lost those games or have made it really, really, really darn close and too close for comfort. That championship team, that 65-62 win in Knoxville at Tennessee, things like that, that's how you build a contender. And that's why I think the statement behind this win is so, so significant.
Oh, absolutely. And when you look at it too, like I think I said this maybe on last week's show, that you don't win national championships on the road because you don't play NCAA tournament games on a true road environment. But you build NCAA championship teams and Final Four teams in those road moments through the regular season, because those are the moments that put you in this us against the world mentality. When it's you all standing in a huddle as a team, and then you break the huddle and you're standing at center court in Gainesville in an SEC road game with however many thousand fans are in there against you, you have a feeling that is the only way we get out of here alive is if we come together and do it. It creates those moments and those opportunities for you to band together and to do it in the SEC opener against the team that Jack is, they're going to be fighting for their NCAA tournament lives. They need wins. They need quad one wins to build a resume. The same way we talk about Kentucky's resume. Florida circled that one weeks ago. It's the reason it was sold out weeks going up leading up to the game. That's what makes playing at Kentucky fun, though, because it create, you have, every time you take the floor at Kentucky, it creates an opportunity to better prepare yourself for the NCAA tournament because you're facing everyone's best shot. I know I sound like I'm speaking John Calipari language here, but this year especially, because Kentucky hasn't been Kentucky good for a while. And some of these road environments that Kentucky's going to walk in are going to be even amped up even more because Kentucky's going to be a top five team and a team that is believed to be one of the favorites to win the national championship. That's going to create these road environments to even another level that we haven't got to see the last couple of years. Yesterday was one of them. They're going to get another one at A&M. So you're getting everybody's best shot. But this team just has resolve, Jack, that it doesn't matter what goes wrong in those moments. They're going to find ways to overcome it. And that leads me to trust them in March when it matters.
I want you to put your coaching hat on and express your frustration to me in real time when you saw Reed contest that three at the end of the game. Like, what would have happened if your team was – if that exact situation unfolded with your team, your reaction to that?
I can't say those words on here. So, no. That has happened to me before. It is a teaching moment. But when he did that, and the crazy thing about it is, if you would have told me to name one guy that wouldn't do that, Reed would have been the top of my list to not even attempt it. But I mean, losing was not even part of the equation until that happened, or at least tying the game. And my thing would be, you're probably not saying much in the moment there because you're not wanting to make it too big of a deal, because instantly when that play happens, now you're trying to prepare them for what could happen next. So you can't spend too much time on the mistake, because now you're wanting to spend your time on in that moment is, let's get out of here. Let's figure out how to get out of this game and get home. Then as you're walking to the locker room, or maybe you're in the tunnel, you're taking in you don't even have to really say anything, right? Reed Shepard's probably already coached himself up to the point as soon as he did it that he's thinking, I'm never going to let myself live this down. And two, when I go talk to mom and dad, they're definitely not going to let me live this down. So, yeah, when it happened, I said, there's no way that number 15 just attempted to do that in this moment where just let the shot go.
Cal said afterward that as they went up four with 2 seconds left on the clock, he looked at John Welch and said, how did we do this? How did we pull out this win? And then he immediately watched that unfold and was just like...
And was what? It a foul? Was it not a foul?
I mean, no, it was clean.
You still don't even attempt it.
So, and I said this on radio, and I think on the Rapid Reaction last night. Looking back, knowing that we, one, came away unscathed, we're feel-good moment, I can almost, I don't, but I can almost appreciate the mindset of where we've already won this game, and I'm still going to play to that final horn and win this game for us. Because in his mind, he was going to block that shot, and he did block the damn shot. But you can't put yourself in that position. You just can't. You just can't. And
somebody's live line was on the line right there too.
You know? Oh my! Well, and that pushed it to the over because I think it was 160 before that moment, and then it put those two made free throws push it to 162, and I think that hit the over for some. For some, but or 170, I mean, but like you just can't do that. But to his credit, he was able to have that game. Could have been a game icing block or whatever, but he had already iced the game with six straight made free throws. Which, talking about the stones on that kid to in that moment say, I'm taking these shots and I'm going to, especially after hitting as a 90% free throw shooter, he had already missed two earlier in the game, front ended a 1-1 that would have made it a one score game. And then Antonio Reeves did it again. That would have made it a tie game. Very frustrating. But for him, after overcoming what he had already overcame, to then hit six straight down the stretch in the final 20 seconds to ice the game for Kentucky, he earned a boneheaded mistake at the end. He just did. Like he earned that decision, even though it was a bad one, and it didn't cost it. My mind would have changed if they did get the tip in, and it would have led to overtime and this, you know, whatever. But we can now in hindsight say, I'll live with it because, you know, six straight free throws to win the game, it is what it is.
I would have loved to have seen the Jeff and Stacey cam when that happened, though. Like I can only imagine how angry both of them were in that moment of like, if you could have had a still frame of those two somewhere, oh man, but Kentucky overcomes it. They win the game. They jump six spots in the net up to number 17 today. Highest net ranking of the season for Kentucky. They get another quad one victory, Jack. 2-1 in that category now with still quad one wins remaining on the schedule. The resume's starting to come together now. And that one, the North Carolina win really kick-started it and jump-started it. And then they go get a big win against Oklahoma just a few days later. And now Kentucky has one in league play. And now you got a team that's right there top five, top six in the country in early January who – I know Joe Lunardi doesn't envision Kentucky getting to a one seed, but when you overcome moments like that yesterday on the road, you're going to have a chance to play your way into that category.
I don't appreciate Halo Master 96's negativity in our comment section. He should check himself before he wrecks himself. But I will add, how hilarious is it that Reed Sheppard hits six straight free throws to ice the game for Kentucky in Gainesville in the O-Dome, immediately gets on his flight back to Lexington, gets off the plane, and immediately goes to a freaking rodeo at Rupp Arena. How hilarious. And is there ever a more this is Kentucky basketball moment ever than Reed Sheppard doing that, what he did in Gainesville, and then going straight to a rodeo? Like, his first thought was, you know what? I'm not going to go home and relax. I'm not going to, you know, chill with my girlfriend and watch a movie and just, you know, let my body. He in his mind, he said, you know what? The first thing I want to do when I get home, I want to go see a freaking rodeo. I think that is the most hilarious post-game story I could remember in recent memory. And I think the whole team, like Justin Edwards was going live from RUP, and like I think a lot of the guys did, but I think Reed in particular, because of the pressure in the end of game moment, to him, his first thought immediately afterward to do that, I just think is so hilarious.
No, I thought it was funny too. Like you come straight out of a road SEC victory and you go to a rodeo, and it just shows you that these guys are loose right now. Like they're relaxed. I don't think any of them, and this, there's a tendency to have this happen, especially at Kentucky. Guys can really start to overthink playing in this program because it becomes a grind, Jack. And we've seen it kind of take over a lot of talented guys in this program, where especially this time of year, where scouting reports on top of scouting report, and it's Tuesday to Saturday, or it's Wednesday to Saturday, and it's league play, and it's fighting to get in a better position for seeding. They look relaxed, though. They look, one, well-prepared, and they don't look like they're overthinking anything. And that's what I'm coming back to with the mistakes. When they make a mistake or they have a bad stretch like Rob did, he went right to the bench. He didn't pout. He sat right there
and was celebrating right, right there with Big Z. I thought that was awesome.
It's the sticking together and the staying together. And this is, it's one of the hardest things to get in any team sport, where you just came out, you made a couple of mistakes. And I'm sure in Rob's mind, he probably thought, man, Aaron didn't help me out here a couple of times. And it would have been easy to start pointing fingers. And it's a big thing that I'm on as a coach too, where I'm like, have some accountability and some responsibility for what just happened. Control what you can control, and that is how you played, how you performed. He comes out, gets himself ready. I see that with all these guys, though. It'd be easy to sit over there and create a selfish moment, but the unselfishness within this team, though, it's contagious. It's senior to freshman. And I've not seen any moments where it was any individual look at me. It's always been about the team from day one, and going to a rodeo after the game last night just kind of shows you that these guys are relaxed and loose and just being kids, like they're having fun playing basketball and they just enjoy living life right now. Like, but this can feel like a job for these guys, Jack, but I don't get the vibes that they feel like it's a job. I think that they're bought in, and I think the staff is doing an excellent job too of keeping that balance with them. And in return, you see a group of guys relaxed and playing well,
and not over celebrating. You know, this, it could have been an opportunity for them to get on their high horse. No pun intended. Actually, I think that was intended, but they could have used that as a chance to just go party and go, you know, immediately focus on the small picture instead of saying we took care of business. Now time to focus on Missouri, then focus on College Station, then focus on Fayetteville, then focus, you know, their minds are in the right place. They aren't celebrating. They are appreciating the small wins, but not celebrating them. They are focusing on the long-term celebration in what they believe is a national championship. I do want to add, because we texted about this in the heat of the moment, and now looking back at it, how hilarious was that 12-foot lefty jump hook from Ugo? Like, I can't believe that, hey, they ran three straight shots for him in the post, which, you know, not the ideal time in my opinion, but hey, what, you know, it is what it is. But that shot in particular, he sunk that sucker and unleashed his inner Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but that was something. Of all of the post moves we've seen over the years, that was one of them.
So you said we texted about it. Like, you all put it in the group, but I didn't get to watch the second half because we had – so I didn't get to watch it live because we had a game. But then I always come back and watch the game. I watched it three times. And I text the group last night, 11:41. I said, I just saw Ugo hit a jump hook from 12 feet with his left hand. It's like instantly just brings back conversation in the group text. Because I was relying on Tom Leach yesterday for the final 10 to 12 minutes of the game and trying to see it playing out in my head. I was following it for sure, but went back and I always watch every game three times before we get on the show and talk because I want to absorb it all. I want to be able to talk about some things. He gave them good minutes. He did. And just having the depth there.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's just, it's made Kentucky just so much harder to guard. And he had a rim run there, too, in the first half and got a basket down the floor. And Reed Shepard, was it Reed through the advance?
Yeah.
Down the floor. And was, how many times do we see Reed make that pass at North Laurel where he would be on the backside of that?
And how many times did we say that's going to be his path to playing time? Did we not say that 100 times? We said, if he plays early, it's going to be because of stuff like that. And look how it unfolded.
I'll keep saying this. There isn't a team in college basketball that advances the ball in transition better than Kentucky. They instantly put pressure on you, and it's the advance. And people, like, it's one of the hardest things to get players to understand is you don't have to over-dribble yourself and attack. Advance it, even if we don't get an initial shot off the advance, you're forcing teams to defend you early. And then you get it back, and then we flow right into a drag screen, some offense, or some of the stuff that Kentucky does offensively, like advancing the ball. There was another advance in the second half where Justin Edwards gets a mid-range jumper out of it, or like a little floater out there along and gets a bucket. Advance the basketball and attack. Having the awareness to do that, it makes you so much harder to guard.
So last year when we would say that Xavier Wheeler would assist Hunt, this is what we're talking about. He had a tendency of dribble, taking it the entire distance and then looking for the kickout, then looking for the alley-oop for himself rather than that Reed Shepard push-up that then leads to the one extra, the hockey assist. It's just getting the ball out of your hands and zip to the best shot. That is team-oriented basketball, not assist-hunting basketball. Selfless versus selfish. That was kind of the greater picture of what we talked about and why we're seeing the results that we're seeing. The stat that we brought up last week, Sean, about scoring 81 points in the first 11 of 12 games was the first time since 96. Well, now we broke that record because that team didn't get to that 13 mark. Now it's 12 of 13 for the first time since that 93-94 team. That team was a pretty freaking huge deal as well, and one of the most fun teams in Kentucky basketball history. So we're trending in the right direction, clearly, because the numbers are backing up what our eye test has shown us. The analytics and the historical context, Reed Shepard shooting the numbers that he's shooting, like, he's on pace to be one of the greatest shooters and the greatest shooter in the history of Kentucky basketball. Like, all the stuff that we see with our own eyes, and it's like, damn, I don't remember the last time we've seen anything like that. Yeah, it's because you haven't. Because this team is doing what it's doing.
Yeah, and they're 18th overall in KenPom, 8th in adjusted offense, 43rd in adjusted defense, excuse me. So they're right there offensively where they want to be. Defense numbers got to just continue to climb. But when you still score almost 90 points and you only make 5 threes, it just shows you the different ways that Kentucky can score points. They hit a high number of free throws yesterday. They were excellent for stretches of the game and just scoring at a pace. DJ Wagner was brilliant in the opening segment of the second half. It just getting downhill, getting to the basket, hit some big shots. Like, all these guys had their moment. And we've not got to the point here, Jack, where we're talking about so-and-so had 25 and then this guy goes and has 25. Those are great stats that Cal talks about when his best teams that go on runs in the NCAA tournament, they have that. I lean more on who has game-winning moments, and it doesn't have to be 25 points. Who goes and grabs a rebound when you need it and then gets a defensive stop and then hits a bucket? Who has those stretches? Aaron Bradshaw had his yesterday. Reed Shepard's already had him. DJ Wagner has had him. Antonio Reeves just quietly continues to be the guy that just puts so much pressure on defenses and stretches you out. Like we were talking about yesterday, he misses some open threes. But when he was still 1 of 5 from three, he was like 5 of 9 from the floor. So it was still efficient. It wasn't one of those inefficient nights where it's 1 of 10 and then he's like 3 of 17 or 3 of 16 from the field. He was still making shots, even though the 3-point ball wasn't falling. Then he hits one and then he hits another couple of baskets, gets downhill. Kentucky can beat you in so many different ways. And I would love to see some of these opponents' scouting reports and these guys sitting in there breaking down film and trying to put stuff together, because I bet the whiteboard is covered with, like, you can't let so-and-so do this. You can't let this guy do this. Well, guess what happens? You may take away two things, but then there's going to be two more things that get you. You just cannot take away everything that Kentucky does and attacks you with.
Well, that's what Todd Golden said after the game. They asked about Aaron Bradshaw's shot, and he said, buddy, if the go-ahead three is made by the eighth leading scorer that has taken 5 threes on the year, you know what? Sue me. You know, he called it, that was a pick your poison moment when trying to come up with it. He said, our goal was to take away assisted 3-pointers for Kentucky. And they only had 6 assists we only had 6 on the day. So it was a great game plan by Todd Golden. And he said, we could not afford a Trey Mitchell catch and shoot. We couldn't, him in the high post, they didn't want the ball in Trey Mitchell's hands to either score inside or out. They did not want Reed Shepard in a catch and shoot look. They kind of said, we're going to live with everything else, because Trey had played the way he had up to that point. Feeding the hot hand would have made sense with Trey, but Reed is Reed, and they definitely wanted to take those two things were options one and two, take them away. Everything beyond that, it's like, we got to kind of live with it, because as you said, Sean, you can't take all of it away. And the shot that we got, if we're making that one, I mean, come on, man.
And when you're Florida and you look at it and you say, okay, we shot the ball. We hit what, 9 threes? Is that what Florida hit? What was the final line for Florida? Nine of 31. Okay. So you hit 9 threes. You limit Kentucky to 5 made threes. You're probably looking at that line right there and saying, okay, we probably won this game, maybe. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the free throw line, you see you've made 19 free throws. But that's the thing. I'm interested to see what these coaches in league play, the Rick Barnes and Eric Musselmans and Nate Oates and all these coaches, what do they see as the most important areas to try to limit Kentucky and take away? Transition's probably where it starts. If you take away some of those early looks in transition, and the way that you do that is you score yourself. You got to score yourself, and you got to be elite transition defensively, because the thing with Kentucky, Jack, is they attack you off makes or misses. They're getting the ball out and they're going. And it's guys, they know where guys are. They're running lanes. They're disciplined. They're rim running. The ball's advancing. That, to me, if I were coaching Kentucky, would be priority number one to take away. Take away the early stuff that they do and contain them in transition, because that gets them going. And then lock in defensively in the half court. But the rest of that is, guess what? Kentucky's hard to guard in the half court too. This is a team that's hard to guard in the open floor. They're hard to guard in a grinded out setting because of the stuff that they run. As they get better defensively and they gang rebound defensively, this team's going to be really hard to beat and eliminate in an NCAA tournament setting, because of the different ways that they can beat you.
In other news, we got a billboard in the works. How wild was that with the Rup to No Good crowd that we absolutely love and very, very dear friends of ours? But a wild development of Big Z comes home. We talked about the ins and outs of how we got here and how unlikely it was for him to actually come home. Good for him. I'm very excited that he decided to, see this thing through and return back to Lexington. But calling a spade here, we still got to wait for a decision for the NCAA. So for those that are unfamiliar with the story, group of Twitter buds, no pun intended, but actually pun intended, decided to put together money for a billboard that will be going up directly across the street from the NCAA eligibility center that just says Free Big Z, love BBN. And the employees of the eligibility center will be seeing that every time they enter or leave their office. And whether or not he gets cleared tomorrow or next week or never, it's going to be going up. And I think it is absolutely hilarious. And I think the people that were taking it way too seriously and saying whatever, you know, they raised it in a couple of hours and it's $3,600. It's not $45,000. It's not, you know, it's people that were saying, well, why isn't this money going to NIL or the collectives or blah, blah, blah. What is $3,600 going to buy the next 7-footer? No, it's not. No. It's, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's a troll job for the NCAA. We shouldn't take ourselves so seriously. I thought it was hilarious, and I thought it was a very creative and well put together, ridiculously quick campaign that took like 2 hours to raise $4,000. It's hilarious.
It's amazing, is what it is, and it's a perfectly placed billboard. Like, you can't. I mean, this fan base, I'm telling you, there's nothing better than some of the things that they do and the ways that they show support. Like, that's something that Cal loves. That, like, that's something that would make John Calipari probably sit there and laugh. He's like, this is brilliant.
And I think we have lost, as a collective identity of BBN, the fun. This is the fan base that camps out for open practices, preseason practices. Like, this is the fan base that does ridiculous licking. Again, I did not advocate. I do not support this decision, but this is the same fan base that was licking Devin Booker's car and, you know, making Cal say, you people are crazy, going and, you know, filling up the Yum Center in a true road game. Like, stuff like that is what makes BBN BBN. Stuff like this is what makes BBN BBN. We have missed the fun, creative, not taking ourselves too seriously stuff that I think that they have capitalized better than most. And that's why I support and appreciate their efforts. And it is also a reminder that we as a collective unit need to not take things so seriously. And, it's fun. We need to be fun and lighthearted. This is a fun and lighthearted season where we're all having a blast watching this team. Why not put up a freaking billboard outside the NCAA offices that, in the grand scheme of things, may be meaningless, but if it impacts things one way or the other and leads us to a freaking decision from the NCAA, then I support it. So sue me. But
if anything, too, it just shows the support that this fan base gives its guys. And that's to, you know, high school kids around the country. That's to players that are going to be in the transfer portal. At some point, I mean, this is a fan base that literally put together a campaign to put a billboard outside where the NCAA has to look at it. Like, that's taking matters into your own hands and doing what you can do. They can't make the decision, but they're like, we're going to do everything we can to get a decision. And I thought it was amazing. I thought it showed the best of this fan base.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I guess while we're talking about it, we'll start wrapping up here very momentarily. But that process with Z, you know, Z wearing the Free Big Z shirt, just like, you know, Enos Kanter did back in the day, Free Enos. Like, it's very clear that there was a conscious, like, let's just be open and transparent about this. The path for Z going home and staying was very much on the table. And it was a conversation that did happen one way or the other. And it wasn't a push. It wasn't UK saying it's time for you to go. And it wasn't Z approaching Cal saying it's time for me to go. It was would this be better off for both sides? If we're not getting to the bottom of a decision, if we're, you know, at the end of the day, kind of wasting each other's time where we're trying to win a national championship, you're trying to build yourself, and, you know, you came here to develop yourself, and if you're not able to do that, then what would put you in best position to do that? And it was a very respectful, mutual understanding between the two sides. And I supported that decision had that been where things ended. But you also can't fault the kid for going home, being with his family, and then kind of being homesick for his second home in Lexington. Like, I thought that was a really cool overall gesture of this kid loves being here and in this environment, this training ground for the NBA. That's also something that we probably understated, was that is he getting better development here than he could back home? Like, and he is training alongside other NBA talent. And I think that means something to him, where even if worst case scenario, the NCAA doesn't clear him, worst case scenario, he's still able to practice against other high level talent and develop his craft potentially to become a draft pick this draft cycle. Like, or maybe the NCAA says you're, you know, suspended for 1 year and you're able to play next year or whatever. It at least opens the door for that door to be open to whatever comes next. Like, they decided as a mutual group to not close the door on each other. And I thought that was cool. Like, it's no harm, no foul for either side. So I am rooting for Big Z to get cleared, because whether or not he can make a legitimate impact for this team right away or by March or whenever, it's a sign that the people that want to be here are here. It's a sign that he wanted to embrace the friendships and the camaraderie and the fun that we are all having. He wanted to be a part, continue to be a part of that. And that's important to have those types of guys and that type of cheerleader on the bench, whether or not he can actually play. Now I hope the NCAA can do the right thing and give him a chance. Whether he succeeds or not in a Kentucky uniform, let him make that decision. Don't make it for him.
Yeah, my favorite thing is his celebration and him up cheering his teammates on. Like, there were a lot of times yesterday when just even the simplest things that would happen in the game, Florida throw the ball out of bounds, something, he is up cheering, clapping, supporting his teammates. Like, I want this for him. I think everybody watching the show right now wants it for him. They want him to have the full Kentucky moment, the full Kentucky effect. And if he ever gets eligible and he steps on a floor, can you imagine the response? And it's got to be at Rupp Arena. It has to be. If that ever were to happen, it has to be at Rupp Arena. So I love his support. I love how, and this hasn't been easy, I'm sure, but I think that that's a guy that clearly enjoys being a part of this program, enjoys being a part of this team. As you said, he's getting the training, better training now than he's ever had, to put himself in position to get drafted. He's preparing against pros every single day. And I just want this to just kind of be a decision to be made, whether it's eligible or not, to stop dragging your feet with this. Like, he either is going to play or he's not going to play. Why are we still in limbo with this? I don't understand. But I hope he gets his moment. I hope he gets eligible. And I hope this fan base, and I hope he gets to experience what it actually truly means to play at Kentucky.
Somebody said in the chat, what would be the bigger pop, Big Z getting cleared now and playing against Missouri, you know, going to the scorers table against Missouri on Tuesday at home, or Reed Shepard's debut and, you know, checking in at the scorers table for the first time in game one?
To this point, Big Z.
Yeah.
Big Z, for sure. Like, with Reed, you had time to kind of prepare your moment. You had seen him play in Canada. You'd already seen him as a Wildcat. This one, though, everyone's kind of been locked in and following this storyline since August. And then everybody kind of knows what he's been through, too. And I just think that moment would be the loudest moment that we've had at Rupp Arena when it comes to a player checking in.
Maybe ever. Like, I don't remember a time that there was so much buildup. I mean, the equivalent would have been if Enos Kanter had been cleared. Like,
yeah. I remember Jared Vanderbilt checked in at South Carolina. I think that was the first game that he played in. But I was there that night, and it was on the road. But you would have had a big response that night. But nothing, like you said, Kanter would have been the only one, I think, that would have got the same reaction. But this one just feels, for the time it's in, for how long it's been, and the outside factors that are playing into this too, with he took him forever just to get here, and how hard it was to get here, and now it's even harder just to play. I just think that all that group together would lead to a huge response.
Yeah, I'm rooting for that for sure. Let's we have a couple of quick notes that we got to get to. First and foremost, the Sources Say podcast is brought to you by Andy Ludeke and MyPerfectFranchise.net. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he is here to help. If you have any questions about business ownership, you can learn more and contact Andy anytime at www.MyPerfectFranchise.net. And a brand new friend of the show, very appreciative of them. With 128 years of service, Monticello Bank is proud to say that they go wherever Wildcats and their fans go. The Go MBC mobile app lets you bank at home, on the road, and if you need to come see us at our convenient branch locations, they're right around the corner. In fact, they have 21 branches in 14 markets. Our Where People Matter motto means competitive loans, competitive deposit rates, and a wide variety of customer-focused financial services, which makes the numbers side of your life a little easier. Find us on the web at mbcbank.com. Monticello Bank, Where People Matter. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And I believe we have a something special to show.
Well, hello, Cindy.
A lot of banks are changing hands these days. Not Monticello. We've been building relationships since 1895. And with each passing year, we've grown.
Hello, Cindy.
Hi.
And expanded our services to meet the needs of the communities we serve.
Are you forgetting something?
Monticello Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
All right, Sean. Missouri coming up at home Tuesday evening. We are now in the nitty-gritty of SEC play. What do you need to see moving forward after test number one has been passed for the Cats?
It's that C word I always go to, consistency. You know, consistency across, you know, the roster and how these guys are playing. You win a big road game. You get a team coming in here that has lost some games and is probably in a position, Jack, that you and I didn't expect Missouri to be in at this point in the season. But it goes back to what I said earlier. Every single team's going to show up and play their best basketball against you. So you better be ready for a team that's going to fight for 40 minutes, because that's what Mizzou is going to do at Rupp Tuesday night. It's a chance to play an SEC road game in your home arena. SEC or not road game, sorry, SEC game in your home arena. SEC games just have a different pop to them when it gets to this point in the schedule. And it's familiarity. It's teams that the fan base follows and watches.
Name brand.
Yep, exactly. And it's something that it means something now when it comes to SEC standings and trying to win a league title and seeding, and you start crunching wins together and stuff. It's one that if you win it, it doesn't do a lot for your resume, but if you lose it, it hurts. So you got to play with some desperation in that matter, because that's going to be a desperate team in Missouri coming here looking to get right. So if you're Kentucky, you're just trying to continue being who you are and take steps in the right direction.
I am very excited for Justin Edwards. For some reason, he does very few little things throughout a game that contribute to winning, and he is stacking solid overall performances. He has not struggled, I don't think, in several weeks now. Like, he is slowly but surely putting things together. He will break through sooner rather than later. And something just tells me it's going to be Missouri. Like, I feel like Tuesday night is the moment's not too high, you know, Florida, everything going into the SEC opener, not Louisville, not, you know, it wasn't one of the big UNC. This is a good opportunity for him to play against a name brand opponent. Stakes a little low. It just kind of continue to stack and put things together slowly but surely, and, you know, be part of that upward trajectory alongside everybody else. He is a part of that, albeit at a slower pace. It's his time now to take that step forward and be the player that everybody believes him to be. It's not like it's a lack of faith in his abilities and what he can be down the road. He will have his breakthrough moment, and I'm calling my shot right now. I think it's going to be Tuesday against Missouri. It's going to be the Justin Edwards game. Mark my words.
And he's taking steps in the right direction, so I can see that. Like, just continue taking steps forward, continue getting better. And I'm with you. I think that that would be something like one of those things that we haven't seen yet is kind of him have that big, big night. And I'd love to see it happen here early in league play. But that would be huge. Playing consistent basketball, getting better on the defensive end, continue to score the ball at an impressive clip, get those assist numbers back up. I know the way Kentucky played and some of the attacks and things that they got at Florida, they got some switches they wanted and kind of just exposed Florida in areas there and attack the rim. So get the ball back moving. But look, Kentucky showed that they can score 87, 90-plus points in a variety of ways. Hitting threes, not hitting threes, getting to the free throw line, not getting to the free throw line. Like the balanced attack of the way that they can do that. It's not a one way. It's not a one direction here where they can get there. There's multiple avenues that Kentucky gets 87, 90 plus points. And they score the ball in an impressive clip. That's going to continue. So looking forward to another league and a league game here at Rupp. And when you're talking about the over-under in SEC wins, remember the lines that we talked about early in the season? Winning the first one was a big one and getting towards that 13-5 win total or going above it. I think this is going to be a team that's going to win a lot of these league games.
There's a lot of questions about Adu. It's not a long-term concern. I know it's frustrating and would have been a very great opportunity for him to play against Florida. Kind of needed him. He was close, but not ready yet. There was some question about will he, you know, sit against Missouri and then maybe return for Texas A&M. I wouldn't rule that out. It's a back issue. I know he's listed out as general soreness, and there's some frustration about more vagueness with injuries and, you know, how can you be a 20-year-old and have general soreness? Yeah, this is also a kid that has grown an entire foot over the last, you know, 4 years since his freshman, sophomore year of high school, and has grown from 6'3 to 6'8 and 6'9 since he first arrived on campus last summer. So understand that it's a little deeper than, you know, just a generic human being with general soreness at 20 years old. He's a little different of a case. Nothing to be concerned about long term. I wouldn't call my shot and say that he's going to play Tuesday against Missouri. You know, I'd probably lean a little bit more time, but it's not going to be another month. You know, it's not going to be one of those prolonged things. It's, you know, it's just the window of he's close, but how close? We're closer than I think most people are imagining in their head with the mystery of yet another injury at Kentucky. Nothing to sweat. It's going to be just fine. Everything is okay, just as it was down in Gainesville, winning 87-85. Sean, great, great show. Appreciate everybody joining us on this Sunday. I had a blast. I'm very excited for SEC play to be here and continue to talk about more SEC wins because I think this team is going to have quite a plenty of them. So, Sean, I'm very excited for just a couple hours. I'll be seeing you in Versailles. We're going to be going to watch Jasper take on Darren Peterson. It's going to be an absolute blast. So if you are going to attend, come say hi. We're looking forward to it. I know you are as well, Sean. Let's go on and get out of here and prepare for that. Where can fans find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at GBB Country.
Find me on Twitter as well at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Go subscribe to KSR Plus. We're having an absolute blast over there. We'll see you next time. We'll be back, I believe, Wednesday night for the post game for the Missouri game, where we're hopefully breaking down a win. We'll see you next time.